This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. This year's three-day International Ocean Film Festival kicks off in San Francisco this Friday. Many of the films will be available online from April 15th to the 22nd. Now we are going to discuss Orca, Black and White Gold, an award-winning docu-thriller exposing the illegal trade in endangered wild orcas and belugas caught in Russia, held in the whale jail, and sold to China, all fueled by U.S. business practices. The team behind Orca Black and White Gold had unprecedented access to activists, trainers, and journalists who revealed the shocking truth behind the global orca trade. The footage is just incredible. Here is a clip from the film. This is David Phillips, executive director of the International Marine Mammal Project.
Why are Russians capturing orca whales? Who's taught them how to do this? Who's given the blueprints of the plants in China that, where they're going to try to export these animals and figure out how to fly them? And it's all SeaWorld's playbook. They're the ones that created this market. SeaWorld is inextricably connected to the hotspot in Russia right now. SeaWorld built the markets. To go after the business model that underpins this entire industry.
That is a clip from Orca Black and White Gold. David Phillips, executive director of the International Marine Mammal Project. This film will be screened at this year's International Ocean Film Festival this Saturday at 4 p.m. at the Cal Theater, Fort Mason Center for Arts and Culture in San Francisco. Joining us is Sarah Nuremberg, director of Orca Black and White Gold. This film is her directorial debut. It took 5 years to make. Sarah, thank you to you and your team for this amazing film. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm stunned by the footage that you got in this film. I mean, you were able to interview orca catchers, the people who go out in the ocean and do horrible things to orcas. How are you able to get so much access?
Well, access was really hard to get. And to put this into context, so as you said, in China, they're building these marine parks as part of huge real estate developments for the entertainment of the residents. And they have been inspired by SeaWorld and turned towards the Russians to build this pipeline. And it wasn't easy to get access to this, as this has been a very clandestine operation. And the supply pipeline in Russia was fueled by this ragtag team of hunters led by a Tony Soprano style type boss. And they were very well connected already and obtained the permits to catch these orcas from the Sea of Ohotsk in the far Russian east to supply the Chinese marine parks with them. And how did I get access? It was a long procedure for sure, but they knew that they had lost the quote-unquote media war on this. So initially, they created even an Instagram channel of the whale jail, the holding facility where they were keeping these animals before shipping them to China. And instead of receiving lots of likes, they received a lot of backlash and were confused by that. And so they were actually happy that someone was truly interested in sharing their, you know, what led them to go down this business. And I was very lucky to have this access through the Russian team that I was working with and just asked them, why are you doing this? You know, what led you down that road?
Amazing. Just to give some context, in the film, we learn about the history of orca captures. So the first captured orca happened in the United States in 1960 and was sold for $8,000. That year, SeaWorld bought Shamu for $100,000. In 1970, the number one orca catcher was Don Goldberry with SeaWorld. He kidnapped 80 orcas out of Puget Sound in Washington State. 30 orcas were sold to aquariums in the UK, Australia, and Japan. The remaining went to SeaWorld. 1980, SeaWorld's booming. 20 orcas were caught in Japan, 55 in Iceland, 56 in the United States. 2013, we did a lot of shows about blackfish. This was such an amazing documentary. It was shown on CNN. I mean, you have people from all parts of the world talking about SeaWorld in a very negative light. Their stock took a dive. But as you say in the film, Sarah, even though that documentary made a huge difference in terms of just kind of raising awareness about this issue, not much really changed for orcas. So can you tell us why that is the case?
There has been definitely a shift in public awareness thanks to the documentary Blackfish, as you mentioned. But unfortunately, the business merely shifted towards the east. And initially, SeaWorld, after facing this massive backlash, wanted to expand to new frontiers and was seeing China as an opportunity. But SeaWorld never sells their orcas. They only rent them for a profit share of every single ticket sold at one of the parks. And so for the Chinese, that wasn't a very profitable business model. And they wanted to have this one-stop shop solution. But in China, it is not a cultural heritage to have these aquariums and marine mammal shows. But it was really, as you say, a blueprint expansion of this SeaWorld model that they've seen to thrive in the West. And apparently, the documentary wasn't translated into Chinese. So they were unaware of the backlash that happened.
Wow. And so today, China has 115 ocean theme parks with animals that have been kidnapped out of the ocean?
Yes.
So let's talk about how a lot of this started to unravel in Russia. The film opens with a boat chasing after an orca in Srednyanya Bay in Russia. This is a global hotspot for orca capture. Can you tell us more about this area and why so many orcas are in this area?
So they were targeting the orcas that have been located there. So there are different ecotypes of orca whales, actually. There are mammal-eating and then there are fish-eating ecotypes. And they were targeting the transient orcas. And it's a thriving area, so orcas are found all across the globe. This isn't just a specific area, but everywhere. And for the people who were behind this business, they already had established other ventures, all linked by extracting natural resources, so to say. So as salmon fishing, logging, fur farms, and even gold mining. And so for them, when this opportunity presented itself, they didn't have any competition in the market. And it was quite an opportunity to make big bucks. And as you say, an orca went up to $10 million per animal on this market. And for them, so they acquired the knowledge on how to capture them and obtained the necessary permits. Most of them were deemed illegal in retrospect and established the dealings with the Chinese marine parks.
You also introduce us to journalist Alyana Stepanova, and we see her taking photos of orcas. I mean, just majestic creatures. They're unfortunately in a tiny, tiny enclosure, and that footage was hard to see. In October 2018, she got word that several orcas were kept in Srednyanya Bay. She asked around to officials and many others, and they said, "We don't know how the orcas got there." So she wrote an article called Black and White Gold, and that is when the story of the whale jail in Russia went public. Can you tell us what happened after her article was published?
Of course, there was a huge outcry, and not just internationally, with the help of Leonardo DiCaprio, who got behind it, or Pamela Anderson, or Jean-Michel Cousteau, but also locally or nationally within Russia. There's this group of conservationists called Friends of the Ocean, And they are in the even more remote island of Sakhalin in the far Russian east. And it's just a small team of conservationists, of activists who helped make this public and who worked together with Alyona. And this outcry, both internationally and nationally, led to the president to go back on his decision to allow the export to China and said on national television that these animals should now be released. But the catch was that he was tasking the very catchers to conduct this release operation.
This is so interesting because, I mean, they went so far as to catch, to say that the catchers were guilty of violating the law. Four companies were charged for capturing orcas illegally. And they asked for international advice. Jean-Michel Cousteau came up with a plan to release them. This has never been attempted before. It's incredibly difficult. What really struck you when you did all of these interviews about why Russia decided to do this, to release these orcas? I mean, in the beginning, it was really very secretive. And some of the people you interviewed tried to get footage, but it was really hard to do that. So why do you think Russia decided to take this, to release these orcas?
It was a national topic. So in every newspaper and every television, there was this for about a year, over and over in the media cycle. And I think they just used this opportunity to have a positive spin on their policy and on politics, basically, because the decision was made on live TV with a national gathering where, you know, Putin is presenting, you know, how much progress the country makes. So it's kind of a State of the Union situation, and they used this as a relatively easy fix to appease the public, I would say.
Yeah, it's so interesting because the journalist who exposed this, Alyona Stepanova, said the government approved the catches in the first place, so I thought the animals would be sold. But the whale jail caused an unexpected twist. I didn't expect it would get so much hype. And then suddenly everything changed and people demanded they rehabilitate the animals. And this is really amazing when you think about it, Sarah. I mean, the power of journalism and then the power of video just showing those tiny pools with these majestic creatures, just they had no choice but to just swim in circles.
Absolutely. It's fantastic. And I have to say also unexpected that they had this success, this very small group of people. And there's one journalist, Alyona, who was releasing the article, that this caused such an outcry. And I think this is, once you get the information, once you see the beauty of the animals, once you do hear about that they are suffering in captivity, you can't help yourself but feel sympathy for it. And I guess this is what also happened within Russia.
We're speaking with Sarah Nuremberg, director of the documentary Orca Black and White Gold. This film is her directorial debut. It's an incredible film about the illegal trade in endangered wild orcas and belugas caught in Russia, held in the whale jail, sold to China, all fueled by U.S. business practices, specifically SeaWorld. And you can see this film at the International Ocean Film Festival Saturday at 4 p.m. at the Cal Theater Fort Mason Center for Arts and Culture in San Francisco. Sarah, you also have very disturbing footage of a number of boats chasing after an orca. As someone who's watching the film says that they actually ran over the poor orca's head and then put out a net. And you could just see the orca flailing around. And they think that the orca actually died because all of a sudden you just don't see the orca anymore. So these catchers are brutal. I mean, of course, look at how much money they're getting. Do you know, was there a relationship between these orca catchers and the Russian government?
Yes, there was a rather dubious connection indeed, because at the heart of this, there is the Russian Research Institute for Fisheries and Oceanography, in short, VNIRO. And VNIRO is tasked to conduct impact assessments and to determine quotas for various catches from fish to marine mammals. And VNIRO actually operates more as a lobby organization, advocating for the interests of the fishing industry rather than advocating for the environmental issues. And as I said, our orca catchers here are the leaders in the Russian salmon business. So it was easy for them to persuade this government-affiliated organization to give them the quotas to catch the animals, and then as a next step also to get the export permits. So this wasn't low-level hunters, and it wasn't a smuggling operation of any sorts, but this was actually sanctioned by the authorities.
Can you talk about the release process? Because initially, it was very hard to get any footage of this. You had someone go, you know, undercover and try to get coverage, try to get photos and video. He was afraid that they actually saw him. But then toward the end of the film, was that your footage? Were you, we actually see the orca's eye. I mean, that was amazing footage. How did you get that?
Yes, it was really all a matter of access. And just how the film is outlining this, there were four release stages. Mm-hmm. So the animals, it was 10 orcas and 87 beluga whales, who then ultimately were released. And the 10 orcas and a few belugas were split up in these four stages. And in the initial two, we have this former special forces agent who is an animal rights activist himself, who is trying to get behind what is actually going on, because there has been a legitimate fear that the whales might not be released, contrary to the obligations that they've got, since the catchers already had been given and spent a down payment by the Chinese marine parks of $7 million. And so he wanted to find out what is going on, because it was not broadcast. There was nobody in this very remote area. So it has been 1,500 miles from the whale jail back to where these animals have been caught initially, on the back of trucks in these shipping containers where they put the whales on the Amur River. And it was, yeah, it was quite a journey. And then, yeah, through the access we had established both with this governmental organization and the catchers, we were seen that, so everybody knew basically that we were talking to everyone. So the conservationists knew we were talking to the catchers and vice versa. And that was kind of a unique position that also opened up this access to the release. And yes, so this is our footage. We were the only ones who were able to follow the release from the orcas, yeah, up to into the wild again.
Amazing. Your footage is just incredible. I mean, think about how massive an orca is. And they put it, and it's almost like putting a comforter under the orca and then holding the comforter by both sides. And so that's how they're being transported. I mean, you can't even imagine. You see them wiggling around. You actually hear them screaming. I mean, it's horrific coverage. But like I said, you even get the eyeball and you just wonder, what are these poor things thinking right now? And of course, we all wondered, well, what happened to these orcas? So the people who were releasing the orcas tagged them. And it's this plastic tag on their fin. We learn that they tore the tags off. And so as far as we know, scientists have independently confirmed that of the 10 orcas released, one did join an orca family in the wild, and the fate of the other nine remains unknown.
Yeah, right. So this has been such an ordeal for them, as it wasn't intended for them to spend a long amount of time in the sea pens, but to be moved on rather rapidly than to China. But still, with the outcry, this transfer was put on hold. So they spent an entire winter in these small confinements. And of course, the release back, so they just reversed the whole process, we can just imagine, was horrifying. Again, they were tranquilized, but still, And the tags that they have been equipped with, so they were drilled into the dorsal fin on the back of the orca, which was horrible on its own. But they were quite challenging, as they emitted signals only every 4 hours. And then the signal had a deviation up to a 15-mile perimeter. And an orca swims dozens of miles a day. So tracking them and finding them was like searching for a needle in a haystack. Wow. And we found, just by sheer luck, we encountered this large pod of 30 orcas, so multiple families together. Mm. And we took photographs, but we didn't see the tag. And afterwards, we were looking at the pictures, and every orca has, by the shape of the patch, of that white patch on the back, can be distinctly identified from one another. It's like a fingerprint for humans. And so we found out that one of the small ones was Orca Zina, who was released in the second stage of the release undertaking. And she didn't have the satellite tag any longer. So this is why it was suggested that maybe the orcas might have torn it out. And unfortunately, this also, well, or is the explanation, or could be an explanation, why the others couldn't be located any longer. Mm. But at least we do know as a fact that for one orca, this led to a happy ending.
Amazing. Amazing. 3 years ago, Russia shut down the whale jail. Is it now illegal to kidnap orcas in Russia?
Actually, it is. So, on a sad note, in the Russian Mosquarium, which is the national aquarium that was housing three orcas, also caught by this bunch of catchers, two of them died last year, and one remaining female gave birth to a calf. And the aquarium announced that they won't resupply with new orcas because it was just too hard to keep them alive. And the Duma, which is the Russian state government, they passed a law last year as well to ban the capture of cetaceans for public display. And the group of activists we are featuring, they managed to put the transient orcas that were the target of these catches into the Russian Red Book. So that means that they are seen as an endangered species and therefore also off limits for catches.
Mm. Sarah, we're almost out of time. What about what's happening in China? Can we assume that the way that the orcas are transferred from Russia to China is exactly how they were transferred from the whale jail to release? And then is any of this, I mean, there are activists on the ground in China. We meet Xiao Ran, a former trainer for marine mammals. She said that a dolphin once committed suicide because it was so neglected and held captive for so long. And at that point, she said she started to see things from a different perspective. And now she's doing activism along with so many other people in China. Do you think anything in China will change because of this kind of awareness raising?
I do hope so. Yes, because in China, education for children is the highest attainable goal you could have as a parent. And Xiao Ran now, after having this pivotal moment in her life of the dolphin committing suicide, she is going to schools, she's giving seminars for families and explaining why this isn't an adequate way to communicate the knowledge or, you know, the science surrounding these magnificent beings, and that it is actually a negative way to have education for the children. And once hearing this, the parents feel quite defrauded. And there are positive examples as well, such as Merlin Entertainment, the company Sea Life. They all belong to one. They purchased an aquarium also in Shanghai where there were two beluga whales, and they decided not to have them in captivity, and they released them to a seaside sanctuary in Iceland. And instead, where the tank used to be, they created another edutainment experience for children based on the IP The Octonauts, which was then quite popular and still attracted a lot of visitors. And so I think that with the backlash here, and there is still much to be done because there are still 18 orcas in captivity in the US or owned by SeaWorld altogether. And if we set a positive example that this isn't right, then I do think that China doesn't want to be antiquated and follow practices that, are of the past.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for this amazing documentary. Sarah Nuremberg is director of Orca Black and White Gold. You can see it this Saturday at 4 p.m. at the Cal Theater Fort Mason Center for Arts and Culture in San Francisco. Many of the films will also be online April 15th to the 22nd, the International Ocean Film Festival. Sarah, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.